In a few weeks, it'll be, believe it or not, 50 years since America Watchman broke out in the streets of Chicago and in the convention hall during the 1968 Democratic National Convention. Decades is currently airing. The documentary Decades presents 1968, the DNC, which takes us back to the visuals of that week in August and brings back some of the people who played a role in what happened. One of those people joins us now. He was a leader with Students for a Democratic Society who organized the Chicago protests and later became known as one of the Chicago Seven. He's also the author of the book, The New Humanity, A Movement to Change the World, Rennie Davis. How are you today, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for, it's not often I get to talk to someone who is living history, not to make you sound like you're ancient or anything, but it's, I do want to mention that the Decades Presents 60,
an event that happened 50 years ago this month, it's pretty impressive. It was a moment, though, where, basically a protest had been denied permits, and that was shocking to people. I mean, the permits have to do with, basic rights to assemble, petition the government for redresses of grievances because you're a citizen of a nation. And it was quite a public debate, really. There was considerable media support, give them permits, but it didn't happen. And as a result, when, demonstrations occurred in front of the Conrad Hilton, where the delegates were staying, it was just, it was unexpected how severe it was. It was considered, called a police riot by the official investigation that reported to the president of what happened. More people watched what happened in Chicago on television and watched the first man landing on the moon. And it had such an impact. That's why we talk about it today.
Well, that was probably the first time that people in America had that much exposure to any protest. Up until that point, you would see, maybe 90 seconds of a protest on the nightly newscast. So this was really a different experience for the people of the country, not just the protesters.
Yeah, well, it had been building, we call it a movement to change the world. They're a rare social phenomena, but they have occurred in the past. The Renaissance changed the feudal order. The American Revolution defeated the British Empire. And certainly the 60s, started out as focusing on civil rights. It literally ended legal lynchings in the United States. But this was a unique situation because there were 150 national organizations that came together in a coalition to come to Chicago. We thought it would be nonviolent, peaceful, but large, potentially a million people coming to the cities. And so even though no one's expectations were met by what happened, it did change things. People may not realize this, but Gallup poll 2 weeks before the convention began, showed that the country supported the government and its war in Vietnam. And 2 weeks after Chicago, the same Gallup poll showed that a majority of the people now oppose the war of the government and, basically took our position that it was time to bring the GIs home.
I want to mention, too, Decades Presents 68, the DNC. It's going to be airing August 17th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 25th at 9 a.m. Eastern, and 28th at midnight Eastern. You can find out where and when to watch, again, over at decades.com. We're talking with Rennie Davis, one of the Chicago Seven, one of the leaders of the protest at the DNC in 1968 in Chicago, and you were listening to Issues and Ideas. And that's, what you guys did was really maybe the period at the end of period or a comma within the sentence, depending, I guess, on what your timeline is, because shortly before the convention, maybe like 6 or 8 months, that was when Walter Cronkite came out and said that the war was the wrong thing to do. And that was one of the major catalysts for Johnson not to go for reelection.
It was, it was another surprise, really. the Democratic Party, you know, was opposed to the war at a rank and file, but it was very difficult to get a public figure to run against a sitting president. We really were the only opposition to the war in the beginning. But it was sufficient that the president of the United States decided to not seek a second term. Another major factor was that there was a candidate in New Hampshire. Those are the days when New Hampshire was the first primary. And although he didn't win the primary against the sitting president, he got 42% of the vote. And suddenly it opened the door for Bobby Kennedy to run for president. And, you know, he won the California primary. It really looked like he was going to, you know, go the distance and win the election. And then, of course, we know he was assassinated that very night, you know, that he won the California primary. So 1968, I mean, it's pretty turmoil and difficult to understand what's going on today, but 1968 was certainly a period that was similar. You know, there was just a tremendous, you know, dissent and opposition, but it was an opposition that basically at the end, you know, did have some very positive effects and results.
A couple of hypotheticals. If Bobby Kennedy had survived and won the Democratic nomination, would the protests have gone on to the degree that they did, or would you have had a little more faith in, okay, we got someone in the system who might be able to fix the system?
Well, there were certainly other issues besides the war in Vietnam, but that was the strength that brought so many people together. And you know, if Bobby Kennedy had won and then carried out his pledges, I think the anti-war movement would have celebrated that. You know, it happened through an electoral process, and you know, the government, in a sense, you know, heard the view of the country and so many people around the world. I mean, and eventually it did hear, you know, through a combination of protests in this country as well as just military defeats, you know, in South Vietnam itself, you know, eventually the United States did withdraw. And all of the concerns for the war in the first place, none of them played out. You know, it would be a domino effect. The communism would take over the whole country. You know, I mean, Vietnam today is, you know, a trading partner of the United States. It does have a single-party government, but, it's a vibrant nation now that is working with the United States. And that was always our feeling that, you know, we were just misplaced in a foreign policy of a momentous sort. With the war in Vietnam.
If someone told you back in those days in 1968, hey, Rennie, you know what? We think Richard Nixon is going to end the war in Vietnam. What would your reaction have been back then?
Well, we understood that it was sort of the worst of two evils, I guess. The Democrats were in charge of the war, and they were humiliated in Chicago by people. And Nixon, you know, went on, you know, as the only two-party solution to win. I mean, he made pledges to wind it down, but in fact, he expanded the war. He actually invaded Cambodia. And when that occurred, the students of this country responded with an action that's never been seen before in the history of the United States, you know, literally 90%. Of American colleges and universities just walked out in protest. And we had support as well from many GI brigades in Vietnam. It was impossible to have a military parade in the United States in the spring of 1970. It's truly one of the most incredible movements, and it was an anti-war movement. It sort of faded into history, but it really did happen. It really turned the tide in Vietnam.
And it really is sad to say, and I agree with you, Nixon did expand before he realized the reality of the situation, unlike Johnson and, well, JFK, actually, if I want to get technical, who expanded, didn't see it working, and did further expansion. So I guess that's maybe the difference between those three individuals. But it is kind of sad, though, that the year and the events that we're talking about in schools today, it's practically ancient history. In some schools, I question if it's even taught now.
I know it is. It's an amazing thing to see, kind of, you know, the war mindset return and to miss really one of the most significant events in American history. One of the things, though, that I think is also occurring that may not yet be apparent to all of the media is that while a movement to change everything is a rare social phenomena, it has happened in the past. It certainly happened in the 60s, and everywhere I go right now, it's clear to me that it's happening again. That, you know, in a way, every generation, new generation in the world, has kind of a heritage and a birthright to change the outcome of the world if they choose. You know, most generations don't choose to do that. But this, we're in a moment right now where it, you know, I'm just seeing it all over. And I'm not speaking about just that there's an ability to have large demonstrations like the Women's March the day after Trump was inaugurated. It's across the board in many issues. For example, in returning to Chicago with the 50th anniversary, there's a large coalition now forming that plans to bring a million people to the Republican convention in Charlotte in 2020. And there's tremendous energy to kind of take back the country and to march on the ballot box this November. I personally think that you have a moment where it could be the largest demonstration in the history of the world at the time of the Republican convention in 2020.
And you write about, too, in your book about how movements, when you're at the starting gate, you really don't know how the race is going to be run and where you're going to finish or whether or not you're going to jump over the hurdle or trip over the hurdle. And maybe that's the motivating factor.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. It was that way in the 60s. I remember, I mean, now I'll reveal how ancient I really am, you know. I remember January 1960, that month. I mean, that we were 1 month away from literally millions and millions and millions of people, most of them in their 20s, just seemingly coming out of nowhere to change an entrenched racist culture and, you know, eventually stand up to a government about a war. But yet on that month, January 1960, we all walked right by each other, completely unaware of what we were about to do. Everybody was here, but yet no one could really see what was about to happen. And it's a bit that way right now today. You know, everybody's here. Everybody's at the starting gate. This really has all the signs of happening again. And yet we're still kind of feeling alone. And, you know, we don't really have the ability to stand up for humanity and take back our country, make things, you know, kind of democratic again. However, you know, whatever your point of view, it's just that we really are here. We're half the world's population under the age of 25. And we are, you know, the people that really feel that the United States is kind of losing its way in the international environment. You know, we perhaps are a majority now of the whole world. And you get an event like the Republican Convention wanting to nominate Trump again, and I think you're going to see just how strong a movement to change the world actually is in today, right now.
But hopefully without the thugs and the bullying that happened in Chicago.
Yes, of course.
I mean, actually, one last question. Would your message have been delivered as strongly if the Chicago police and Daley didn't react the way they did? If you had the original intention of your peaceful protest,
the largest coalition of that time, and you know, we put on demonstrations very successfully. Our you know, everyone joining the coalition took a vow that they would utterly and strongly, profoundly commit to nonviolent tactics. You know, after Chicago occurred, we did it again. We had a demonstration of 500,000 people in Washington and another 250,000 in San Francisco on the same day, where there were no arrests at all, and it was just, you know, an outpouring of human sentiment against the war. So I'm believing that that's still the bedrock of a movement to change the world. If people do go to Charlotte, that it really can be nonviolent. It needs organization, and that needs that commitment, but it's really there. It's just that, you know, hopefully the cities of the country and the governments of the country have learned again that it's just foolish to not honor the right to assemble. It's a basic American right, and if people are willing to, you know, conform with the law, they certainly have a right to assemble and petition their government. And hopefully Chicago, you know, taught everybody that lesson forever.
And I know it's been worded different ways, but basically the more we understand yesterday, the better clarity we have about our today.
Yes.
And I referenced before, too, that so much of what we consider now to be history isn't taught in our schools anymore, going back to the Vietnam War. Some schools don't even use that as a starting point now for history lessons. That's why I think you should really spend some time watching Decades Presents 1968, the DNC, because it does present a very fair, accurate, unbiased view of what took place and the power, the impact that those days in Chicago had almost 50 years ago. Believe that. You can watch it August 17th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 25th at 9 a.m. Eastern, and the 28th at midnight. You can find out more at decades.com. And also, be sure to pick up Rennie's book. It's now called The New Humanity, A Movement to Change the World. Website for Rennie's book, newhumanitybook.com. Rennie Davis, thank you so much for how you are preserving the ideas of those times and integrating them into how they can still be effective today. Thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. Thanks so much.